You might have spent your younger years glued to programs like The Jetsons or Doctor Who, but you probably watched your fair share of Aussie TV as well. Skippy or The Henderson Kids, those homegrown shows have had ripple effects across the generations and even reached overseas audiences, some of them. But changes to quotas for local content might slash the Australian-ness of kids' TV programs. Is that a problem? Our guest today is Jessica Balanzategi, Senior Lecturer in Cinema and Screen Studies at Swinburne University of Technology. She's a researcher for the Centre for Transformative Media Technologies. Jessica, welcome to Life Matters.
Yes, it's always very happy to talk about this topic, Australian kids' TV.
Well, and it really touches our hearts, doesn't it? We suddenly remember all the things we used to watch as children. I had trouble, though, thinking back to the Australian shows that I watched. They came eventually. But what is it about the shows we watched as children that have such a lasting impact? Why do they stay with us?
Yes, well, we're conducting research. I'm part of a research group called the Australian Children's Television Cultures Research Group, and we've just launched a big project into this and into understanding this better, because I think obviously it's very personal, the kind of shows that stick with us and that we have clear memories of. It's kind of TV is so built into kind of the fabric of our everyday lives. So that on one level, it's very personal, but we're also interested in finding out which shows have kind of resonated in the collective Australian consciousness as well, and in particular which Australian shows audiences remember and which shows kind of stick with them into adulthood. And that's one of the key things that we're interested in finding out. What is it about these shows, in particular these local shows, that kind of stick with audiences as they grow into adults, to the point that they may even want to share these shows that they remember with their own kids and grandkids, so they have this kind of intergenerational appeal?
And what are people telling you? Do they have particular shows that come up again and again?
Yes, well, we've just launched our first surveys into this, so we're still kind of analysing the data we've received so far, and the survey's still out in the world, so we haven't been able to kind of finalise our data analysis or come up with statistically significant results. But it's been fascinating for us to see the responses as they come in and the kind of shows that come up again and again and again. And Round the Twist is a big one, classic Australian kids show from the 90s that's kind of a horror fantasy hybrid. That one comes up all the time.
So that's based on the Paul Jennings books?
Yes, adapted from some of Paul Jennings' short stories and produced by the Australian Children's Television Foundation. And that one was really popular overseas as well. In fact, it actually was broadcast in the UK before it was broadcast here in Australia. So, it's not just local audiences who fondly remember that show. But fascinating for me as a children's media researcher, because Round the Twist kind of, in some ways, played with the boundaries of what we consider or appropriate or safe content for children. And that might be one of the reasons why it's really stuck with audiences and kind of continues to resonate into adulthood, although it also helps that it was recently released on Netflix. So, everyone's kind of able to remember their love for the show and rewatch all of the episodes because it's now available on Netflix, which is a new phenomenon when it comes to children's television. And we're also really interested in understanding that phenomenon better, how local kids shows take on these new lives in the streaming service era.
Well, yeah, we showed our kids episodes of The Goodies on the weekend because we'd loved them as kids. Are people who watched Round the Twist in the 90s now starting to show it to their children?
Yeah, so this is the kind of phenomenon we're seeing, which, what a time to be alive. We can go to these streaming services and show our own kids Round the Twist or The Goodies. And it does, kind of change how children's television works on some level, because there's this timelessness to the kind of shows that we might introduce our kids to. And something that we've been interested in so far in our survey results, we've been asking parents whether it matters to them or to their kids if the shows that they watch are new, and that doesn't seem to really matter to them. So obviously there's a lot of this nostalgic intergenerational sharing of kind of these beloved shows going on.
Well, and some of the shows that came up were things like Mr. Squiggle and Play School and Adventure Island, going back to the late 60s. A lot of our listeners might remember those. And you're looking at the role of Australianness, how these shows reflected back to us or told us what our identity was. What kinds of things are you interested in looking at there, Jessica?
Yes, well, we're interested in finding out what it is about local content in particular that resonates with audiences and why it matters that children have access to Australian content, because we have this assumption that that's really important, I think, and we're seeing that in our surveys, that people think this is important, but we want to understand that in more detail and depth, I suppose. I think we all know that a diverse media diet is really important, but children should have access to these TV shows that speak to their own culture and kind of emerging sense of national identity as well. And, you know, we're in a pretty precarious time at the moment because, as you mentioned at the beginning, local kids' content quotas for commercial networks have recently been scrapped. So we're in a precarious time because, you know, we don't know how much local children's content will be produced in the future. So this research is really important at the moment so that we can gather some evidence around why it is important that children have access to shows that reflect their own local culture. And we already are seeing that in our survey responses. So people often talk about that, how important that level of familiarity with the characters' accents and their style of dress, their lifestyles, even the settings of the shows. So these familiar kind of suburban settings, for instance, all of these local elements help them to connect with the stories and the characters on this more personal level. So it's interesting that even shows like Round the Twist and Adventure Island, which you mentioned, which have kind of really wacky fantasy elements, they're grounded in local culture, which kind of helps child audiences to, I guess, connect with their story worlds on a deeper level.
Yeah, though it's something that comes up a lot around discussions of diversity, isn't it? That not everyone can connect with those white suburban locales and environments. There's a lot of people saying, you know, we need a greater representation of the cultural diversity of Australia. Also, it was fascinating, Jessica Balanzategi, to notice that the commercial networks have been lobbying for this cut to quotas for years, and they argue that locally produced programs aren't as popular, they don't rate as well. So, I mean, are these Australianness things important to parents but not so much to kids?
That is a very interesting question, and we want to find that out as well, because there isn't much, we don't understand much about how children perceive national identity and how that intersects with the kind of TV they watch. But yes, absolutely. The commercial networks have actually been lobbying for the removal of these local children's content quotas for years. And so they finally had all their dreams come true, I suppose, when the government finally scrapped them last year. But it's a really complicated issue because the commercial networks, the kind of content that they, children's content that they commissioned, was often this kind of cheaper digital animation that was quite culturally indistinct, and then they might not have put it in the best time slots. So, you know, it's a fair argument that maybe that content didn't rate so well, but they weren't exactly setting it up for success a lot of the time. So it's interesting, even though all the way back to Round the Twist, which was originally broadcast on Channel 7, they put it in a very bizarre time slot at 8:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning, which caused quite an uproar here in Australia at the time, all the way back in 1990, because it was already doing really, really well overseas in the UK after being released on the BBC. So, you know, there's a long history of this kind of with the commercial networks, I guess, it's almost setting children's TV, local children's TV, up to fail, because for them, they find it quite a, you know, an onerous thing to have to produce local kids' content. So it's got a pretty volatile history, this whole discussion around local kids' quotas. But yeah, the commercial networks don't have to worry about it anymore because there is no mandate for them to produce local kids' content.
Well, and then you've got the Bluey juggernaut, which, you know, is also really popular overseas. And I mean, there's a lot of fantastic stuff on the public broadcasters, ABC and SBS. SBS has got this beautiful little animation called Little J and Big Cuz. Can the public broadcasters, you know, carry the load alone?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. The tricky thing is, and ABC, obviously, and SBS are doing such great work when it comes to broadcasting and commissioning local content for kids. And it is true that most parents do turn to the ABC to watch local content. And Bluey, I think, is the most successful show that the ABC have ever released on their iView platform. So obviously it goes so well. But yeah, it's a tricky situation because we can't necessarily rely on the ABC and the SBS to carry the load, because they're not actually obligated to produce or broadcast a certain amount of local children's content. So they don't have quotas. They have these kind of internal targets. So the ABC can pull funding from the children's TV budget whenever it kind of needs to, which has happened quite a few times in the past couple of years. So it's a precarious situation if we're having to rely on the ABC and the SBS to be the home of Australian children's content.
And I guess the big question at the end of this, Jessica Balanzategi, is does it matter? I mean, how different are the kinds of stories that are told by Australian screen creatives compared to American or British ones, outside the kind of we recognise these streets and these accents arguments?
Yes. I mean, another really big and meaty question, which we'll be kind of exploring over the next 4 years with our Australian Television Children's Cultures project, because it's a much more complicated question, I suppose, than we might assume. And we're so interested in seeing what kids make of this. But as I said, like, a diverse media diet is really important, but it's becoming, I think, increasingly difficult in this streaming service dominated landscape to find good quality local kids content. And I think, yes, it is really important that local kids content is part of this diverse media diet. And we are seeing, I think, great improvements, for instance, with the work that the Australian Children's Television Foundation is doing to produce shows that have more cultural diversity than we might have seen in the past with Australian kids TV. So I think it's really, really important that kids have access to high quality local shows that are part of this kind of diverse media diet. But it's becoming increasingly difficult when, you know, some research by the Australian Media and Communications Authority has found that YouTube and Netflix are the places that children tend to go to these days. They've replaced broadcast TV to be the most popular way for children to access content. So it's really tricky when, you know, YouTube and Netflix, they obviously don't have any obligation at all to have local, high quality local kids content. So yeah, it's a difficult landscape, but that's what our research aims to contribute to, this new evidence that will support best strategies in response to this changing landscape.
Yep, though at least now you can get round the twist on Netflix, so that's something.
Yes, absolutely.
Jessica, thanks so much for joining us today. I can't wait to talk to you in a few years and find out what the kids are saying compared to what their parents are saying.
Yes, and we're really keen for people to contribute to these two surveys that we've launched. So you can go to our website to do these surveys and let us know what your favourite shows are and how you access local kids TV, which is actcresearch.com. So yeah, we can't wait to hear from people.
Okay, actcresearch.com. Jessica, thanks so much. It's been really fun chatting today.
Thanks, Hilary.
Jessica Balanzategi, Senior Lecturer in Cinema and Screen Studies at Swinburne University of Technology and Researcher for the Centre for Transformative Media Technologies. Wow, Emma Nobel, I bet people are just very excited about kids TV.
Yeah, they really are. On your favourite, The Goodies.
Oh.
Atixa says, The Goodies, which I loved as a kid, was not supposed to be a children's show. Tim Brooke Taylor was horrified when he visited Australia and discovered that it was popular viewing after school.
Yeah, I think they had to cut out quite a few of the nudity bits, but yeah, I note that some bits of it have not aged well in a cultural diversity sense either.
Yes. One texter says, how many people remember the magic boomerang? I wish I could stop time like the kids did in that program. And yeah, I think that was on in like the mid-60s. I don't believe I've seen that one, though. I was more an animals of farthing wood kind of person. On being diagnosed with ADHD in adulthood, one anonymous texter says, I was diagnosed with ADHD after self-identifying at 42 years of age. I spent my whole life on and off the mental health wheel. I was so attuned to my son's ADHD, but when he also didn't find the respect and support he needed. I know I have a diagnosis, but I still find lots of stigma. Another writes, I'm in the process of trying to receive an ADHD diagnosis at 26 years old. Previously, I had ruled out ADHD as I don't consider myself a hyperactive person. I'm yet to secure an appointment for an assessment after calling 14 different clinics in Melbourne, many of which have closed their books, to new patients, or they're unable to take patients until later this year. And this texter notes, I had one clinic advise me that their next available appointment is September 2022.
Good Lord.
Thank you for discussing this largely misunderstood condition, writes this texter. And we're still getting lots and lots of texts on the circular economy, all the sorts of things that people are, you know, repairing, computers, toys, an old kitchen dresser door mechanism, clothes, darn socks, and even repurposed flat sheets. We'll have more in the mailbox next week.
Can't wait for that one, Emma Nobel. Thank you.
Thank you.